Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Our scripture reading today comes from Isaiah chapter 44, verses 1 through 8. But now hear, O Jacob, my servant, Israel, whom I have chosen. Thus says the Lord who made you, who formed you in the womb and will help you. Do not fear, O Jacob, my servant, Jeshurun, whom I have chosen. For I will pour water on the thirsty land and streams on the ground. I will pour my spirit upon your descendants and my blessing on your offspring. They shall spring up like a green tamarisk, with willows by flowing streams. This one will say, I am the Lord's. Another will be called by the name of Jacob. Yet another will write on the hand, the Lord's, and adopt the name of Israel. Thus says the Lord, the King of Israel, and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts. I am the first and I am the last. Besides me, there is no God. Who is like me? Let them proclaim it. Let them declare and set it forth before me. Who has announced from of old the things to come? Let them tell us what is yet to be. Do not fear or be afraid. Have I not told you from of old and declared it? You are my witnesses. Is there any God besides me? There is no other rock. I know not one.
Pastor Linda and I continue to try to help to reboot the Christian campus ministry that's meeting out at UC Davis. So we were invited in September. They have a dynamic multi-faith living community, about 40 students from different religious traditions that live there together. But over the years, as the focus had gone to that multi-faith community, the Christian community had dwindled down. And so when we arrived in September, there were one or two students that were in that space. So on Tuesday nights, we've been going out every week, and we've been trying to help reboot the Christian worship. And so we gather with Bryce and with Brendan, and we gather around worship together. And then we share godly place stories. And then we gather, as so many of you do, in kitchen tables, and we break bread. We're having 6, 8, 12, 13, 14 students out there now on a regular basis. And so in just a couple of months, we've grown to a critical mass where we actually have a kitchen table and worship in that space. It's been really exciting to watch that ministry grow and to take shape. And we have no idea where it'll head in the future or what it might look like. They're in the process of trying to figure that out. But it's been a gift to try to help that process along over these last couple of months. So when we came back here on Tuesday night, you could hear outside as we pulled in to unload everything, you could hear music, and it was really loud. And so we made our way into the sanctuary, and rows, and I don't know, at least 15 or 16 people, all with brass instruments and a couple of drums, were jamming. They were playing together, Element Brass Band. Some of you have been out around town and you've heard them. So imagine like 18 people here, and as only Linda can do, she dives into the middle and starts dancing. I laid back and was like, I'm just gonna get the lay of the land, see what's going on. I'm not quite there yet. So the music is just moving out of this space. And then upstairs, there's around, I would guess, maybe 100 people that are meeting here on Tuesday night, three different 12-step recovery groups. And out on the front lawn, they just finished up, but there was a person who ran out of space for her dog obedience school, so she'd been setting up shop on the front lawn. It was alive when we walked back in here at like 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night. And to many of you, you might think, well, great, like, good, the church is being used in the middle of the week. That's exciting. The truth is, though, that a few years ago, that wasn't the case. What's come to be like second nature of just how it is, it hasn't always been this way, that this space is alive all the time on Sunday morning or even in midweek. A few years ago, we were on the brink of closure at this church. 4 years ago, one of our trustees said it like this. This trustee imagined being the last person there when the door was locked for the last time as this church was closed down. This person loves this church, like all of his body and soul and heart. And that was what he imagined. That was the truth that we were facing as a people. I remember we had a come to Jesus talk. We were upstairs in one of those rooms that people are sharing about breaking open their lives in this recovery group on Tuesday night and other nights. And we were telling the hard truth that Central United Methodist Church has been spending about $3,500 a month more than it brings in. We have a reserve fund that in 7 months, 8 months, it's over. And then we have to decide, what are we going to do? That's how long we can last, 7 or 8 months. That's the truth of the story. Around the same time, maybe about as many people as gathered with Element Brass Band last or on Tuesday night, 15 or 20 of us gathered up here in the front of this space as the table. It was on Sunday nights at the time, 4 years ago. We were gathering for the first time because many of us longed for new ways to do church. The old ways that we've known, as Carrie Newcomer sings it, they just weren't working anymore. And so we were trying to tap into something new. And we were gathering here together to do that. Over these last 4 years, Central, that community that has been in Sacramento since 1850, and the table have been woven together. We talk about it as two churches woven together as one. The evolution of church, a phrase that we use around here often. We are one community, a community that has known what it's like to thirst amid dry ground, as we heard in Isaiah. We wondered if life could spring up like willows by flowing streams. In so many ways, we are a community that knows what it's like to be in exile. The words that we heard Sarah share from Isaiah this morning, they are spoken to a deeply wounded people who are in exile. They've been removed from the land that they love, and they're forced to live outside of that. And so the writer says to them, "Do not be afraid. God's done powerful things in the past." And Isaiah reminds them that our God is a redeemer who will once again act to save those of us in exile from this dire place. Do not fear or be afraid. Have I told you from of old and declared it? You are my witnesses. One theologian, Heather Murray Elkins, says it this way. Listen and live. It's a command and a plea. It is the heart of the revelation of the holy God to a people who have closed their ears and barricaded their hearts against the one who created, redeems, and sustains them. God will redeem God's people in exile. Redemption. This word in the biblical context, I want to share one of the ways, one of the images that it's drawing on. See, in their worldview, if someone was taken in because they could no longer afford the debt that they owed, they were taken into enslavement. And it was the obligation of the closest relative in the family to redeem that person, to pay the debt for them. That's the kind of God the people of Israel are calling on. When we get into that place that no one can imagine, debt over our head, God is going to be there like that closest relative to redeem us. It happened to God's people when they were enslaved in Egypt. And it will happen again to God's people who've been exiled, kicked out of their land. And they're encouraged to hold that. See, God longs for them to simply listen and to live. And then Isaiah warns them, and it can sound really harsh to our contemporary ears, warns them against idolatry. And this is the part of Isaiah, and this happens often in the Bible, and we have to figure out how to wrestle with this and how to work with this today. But Isaiah says basically like, my God is bigger than your God. And it's really hard to figure out how do we hold that in a multi-faith world where I believe that Jesus calls us to see other religious traditions and the hope that they offer as simply that, the hope that they offer, and to live as deeply as we can out of our tradition and to learn from theirs and to find dynamic hope in the midst of that between one another, not to try to make everyone the same. But in Isaiah's day, the people knew trauma in ways that maybe I can't, surely I can't even fathom. See, they were a minority in a foreign land, and they feared assimilation and annihilation. And so to lift up one's own religious tradition amidst all of that, that's where the gospel medley that we heard this morning, that's where the truth of that comes from. We will not let that story die away. Listen and live. We're not going to be shackled. See, the temptation in that moment for an exiled people, I think, is to circle the wagons. Circle the wagons. We're going to be okay. Circle the wagons. And God says, no. You're my witnesses. Witnesses have to go out into the world. You have to find ways to live among all of my people as witnesses of hope and redemption. We made a decision here at Central, here at the table, about 4 years ago, that we're not going to circle the wagons. We leaned in to God's redemption and grace, and we've been trying to listen and to live together since then. We've looked back at the method in Methodism. If you've been through Blueprint, you've learned a little bit about that. If you're in a weekly kitchen table, you're practicing it. We're learning to sing an old song in some new ways. So I want to share just a little bit of our story here at the table, along with some visual images. Jesus gathered at the table with tax collectors and sinners. For Jesus, all means all. In October of 2010, the table began taking shape here at Central United Methodist Church in East Sacramento. More and more people started to find places at the table as this church evolved and grew together as one. We learned to grow in faith throughout the week in small groups called kitchen tables. Those kitchen tables meet in coffee houses, in bars, in homes, some even here at the church. And we gather in those to watch over one another in love. Kitchen tables are the heartbeat of our community. By rooting our lives in grace and growing in faith, though, see those edges, those borders, they get erased. And God sends us out into the world to reach in love. That is our story. Through that, we rethink church together. We root our lives in grace and grow in faith and reach in love. And as you see in that new image on the left, you can see the cross that takes shape there as folks gather in kitchen tables, as we gather in worship as we are right now. A few months ago, just leave it right there for a little bit, Laura. A few months ago, Bryce mentioned that there's this phenomenal marketing group here in Sacramento called Marion Carson. If you've watched the NFL ads during the Super Bowl before, you've seen some of their work. They did one of the NFL ads for the NFL during the Super Bowl. It's an okay resume. I don't know. It's all right. Bryce said, this group is willing to work with a nonprofit for 24 hours, put their whole staff to work on helping this nonprofit not suck. So why don't we apply and see if they'll help us? And really, Linda and I thought, they're never going to want to work with a church. No. And Bryce said, I don't know. I think they might. Let's turn in something in. And so we said no, and Bryce wrote something up, and he sent it over to them. And then they called, and they said, we want to work with you all. We hear your story, and we want to help you tell your story. And so we gathered down there. It's this really phenomenal space, and we started to tell our story with them. And from that experience, they helped us create this image that you see up here, the table at Central United Methodist Church, and you can see the logo that's in that space. When they looked at our website, what they pointed out was, your website is kind of dreary. And I thought, I made that. It's pretty good. And they were right, it was. And they said, there aren't a lot of images on it. Like, do you have people that go to your church? And I was like, yeah, actually we do. But here's the deal. When we made that website 4 years ago, we really didn't. We really didn't. And if we were going to have like the 15 of us up there, it would get a little weird. People would be like, what's going on? So they helped us. And yesterday, our new website went live. And you can see, show the next one. It looks darker up there, but it's going to be fabulous. And it has an online directory that we're trying to create on it. So you can go in and log in, and it's secure, and put your information on there. It's going to be way easier to use. That's our hope. And it's new, so there might be some glitches. As you see them, be gentle on us, because we're just trying to figure out how to do it and those
Dude,
things.
You are not going to talk about your mistakes right now.
Okay.
No. This is brilliant.
It is phenomenal, the folks that have worked on it, and how it's coming together, and it's very dynamic. It'll work from your
Beautiful.
Phone. You can go on it right now and sign up to help out with Winter Sanctuary toward the end of the month to help house 120 homeless folks here in Sacramento. We hope that you'll do that. It's easier to navigate. You can use it on your phones. It's brighter. But here's the real deal. We know that many people, when they're looking for a place, a community, they're going to look first online. And then they need some consistency between what they see there and what happens when you walk in here. And then when we tell people about a kitchen table and you show up and it looks radically different than anything else, all of those places, if they're not consistent, they turn people away. They exile people from the church. And the reality is that we're a church of folks who've mostly already experienced that. We've already been hurt once, some of us really badly. So we can't take a chance with any of those places, because God's redeeming love needs us to express community and hope in ways that don't crush people, that don't turn people away. And so that's why we've been trying to work on this. We know that God is a redeemer of all, and that for God, all means all, and our redeeming God longs for us to listen and to live into that hope. We know that a lot of you want to try to figure out how to share that message with your friends and your neighbors and your colleagues. And we know that a lot of you feel really uncomfortable doing it. We know because back in November, we shared deep commitments with one another. Our goals for how do we want to be a community together? What do we want it to look like? 71 individuals and families in this church turned in those cards to say, these are some of my hopes for how I want to root my life in grace and grow in faith and reach in love in the next year. And the thing that kept coming up was, I want to come out as a follower of Jesus. I want to come out about that, and I'm scared. I'm afraid. I don't know how to do that. I don't know what that looks like. We don't have easy answers for you about how to do that, but we're not afraid to live into that question together as a people. And so that's one of our hopes over the next year, is that we will discern ways to come out with friends and neighbors, folks that we've never encountered before, never met, to let them know that we're trying to figure out how to follow Jesus, and we're doing it in this community, the table at Central United Methodist Church, and we want to welcome you into that space. That's our hope. On Wednesday, we're going to begin Lent together, and our series is called Give Up Certainty for Lent. Live in the Parables of Jesus. Jesus wasn't afraid of that. So we're going to live there with Jesus during this season. Some artists have been meeting. You're going to see come next Sunday, we're going to have art in here that will inspire us to live into those questions. We're going to do that together. Then we're going to move into Easter, and artists are already working on what's going to happen during Easter as well. In Easter, we're going to celebrate for a couple of weeks the resurrection of God that calls us to make justice in the world. And we're going to reflect together as a community, what does that look like in our lives? What does that look like as a church and as an individual to do justice in the world, far and near? And then we're going to go into a series around worship. Like, what the heck is it even for, anyways? We're going to wonder about that and reflect on why God needs to shape us as God's people through worship. Isaiah records it this way. Thus says the Lord, the King of Israel and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts, I am the first and I am the last. Besides me, there is no God. Who is like me? Let them proclaim it. Let them declare and set it forth before me. Who has announced from of old the things to come? From of old the things to come. Let them tell us what is yet to be. So what is yet to be for us, for the table at Central, for you? Where is God's unfolding grace leading your story? A few weeks ago, 7 or 8 of us carried an enormous table. If you've been in worship here before, you might remember it. We normally have an altar table up here that's huge. And if you try to pick it up, you realize it's heavier than it looks. So it took 8 of us to carry it out of here and put it over there. And Mark has started to sand it down, and he's restoring that table. And he'll return it. Is Mark here at the moment? He is. Mark's going to return it next Sunday, Mark. Next Sunday. Actually, Mark is going to return it when he's done restoring it, because as an artist knows, sometimes it takes longer than others of us plan for it to. That's what redemption looks like, taking that old table and redeeming it. Listen and live in our story as we live into that redemption. Our story gets caught up in God's story. This used to be... Sarah and I used to have this as our kitchen table. When we bought our house 4 years ago over by Theodore Judah, this was our kitchen table. And so when we dreamed about the table and we were here at Central, when we imagined the very first time people coming together to watch over each other in love, to share about how they're doing harm and doing good and staying in love with God, this is where Linda and I sat to talk together about what the table could look like. Here we are a few years later with 11 or 12 kitchen tables meeting all over the city where people do just what we did there, dreamed about how God longs for us to live and then try to give voice to that, to try to share it out loud. This is what redemption looks like. As we listen and live into our own stories and get caught up in God's story. Some of you might have noticed the sign outside. It's kind of reflective of how we've been. If you're going one direction, it says Central United Methodist Church, and if you're going the other direction, it says The Table. It's not because we're confused, though it might be true that we are confused. It's we're trying to live in to God's love and grace. And that sign that at one time expressed that in a full way to people, it's grown old and it needs redemption. So we're trying to take some of the pieces of it, and Mark and Carrie are working together. And we want you to imagine like a wood sign with some rusted metal on it that has that new image outside. So that when people drive by, they see the beauty that's inside this space around you seated this morning. They see that lived out there as well, because that's what redemption looks like. Taking those old things, redeeming them into new life as we listen and live our story and see how it unfolds with God's story. I hope Easter is when we'll have that new sign out there. Or maybe some of you walk down this breezeway. That's what I call it. I don't know what you're supposed to call it. But the thing out there that looks like at any moment it could fall down on top of you when you're walking outside, you might have noticed that. Or maybe you didn't notice it because the concrete below is uneven. And you had to actually pay really close attention just walking because you didn't want to tumble. Well, Brenda Waters has a friend who's an environmental architect. I didn't know there was such a thing, but that's what he is. And Antonio, who's a farmer, has already worked with this person out at Soilborne Farm. And tomorrow night, Linda and Antonio and I are going to meet, and we're going to walk around with this person as we dream about what this space could look like, how it could be transformed, a place with shade, because so many of us gather out there to break bread after worship, a place that looks natural and fits in, a place that requires very little water, because right now we have grass that requires a lot, a place for children to play that fits in to the beauty of that space outside. That's what redemption looks like. It's when we look to that and imagine how our story is getting caught up in God's story. Some of you might have walked by the social hall as you came into this space. If you did, about 5 of the 6 lights that try to light that space up work. That's about it. If you're in there from April until October, it's so hot that you can only do Bikram yoga. And if you're in there from October until April, it's so cold that you can like cure meat. This is our boiler. There was a person from another church who came by. They did a retreat here a couple weeks ago, and she went downstairs and she came back up, and she said, "Your boiler is just like our old one. Ours is so big, we can't get it out of the basement because it's just stuck there, but ours gave way 10 years ago and we had to get a new one." And I thought, 10 years ago, ugh. That's our boiler system right there. We don't know how long it's going to last. It might last for a while. Lyle and others have taken phenomenal care of it to keep it going for this long. But what we imagine is that if we could bring together HVAC and maybe solar panels to heat it and or to power it, then you could be in the social hall in the summertime or the wintertime. Like, redemption could happen in that space not just in October, but all year round. We set our goals so high here at the table. But that's our hope, because for a long time, that thing right there made it possible for redemption to happen in this place right here. And people cared so much about that they invested right there. And so, how will we? What's redemption going to look like for us? I have a blank image there, because I think we're going to have to keep dreaming about it. We're going to have to keep wondering together. Some of you might have come in the back to the church. We have a playground, and it is older than most of us in the room. It still gets great use. Kids love it. I'm not sure that it's safe, but that doesn't matter to four-year-olds often. And what we wonder about, what we imagine, is a playscape, maybe a labyrinth in that space, a playscape for children to wonder that is beautiful, that takes the natural environment around here, wood and sand and bark, and lets kids dream about how God is working in their lives. That's what redemption looks like. It's us living out and listening to our story, seeing how it's related to God. But then we have CPAs who are on our finance and trustees teams who are dreaming about this. And they say, yeah, but that's going to cost like $800,000 or $1.4 million, details like that. And we think, wow. But somebody a long time ago who didn't have enough money in their pocket dreamt about this place, and here we are right now. Listening to our stories, living into them, seeing how they're getting caught up in God's story. The church has owned a house in Methodist speak. We call it a parsonage. It's a fancy word for a house that we have so that pastors can rotate through every year, and you can have a house for that pastor to move into. It's an old system, like a lot of things in the Methodist Church. Some of it works well and some of it doesn't. The parsonage is a gift that people who've gone before us have shared with us. Pastors haven't lived in it for quite a while here in this church, at least for a few years, but it's provided some rental income, so we've used that to help fund ministries here at the church. One of our dreams that trustees and finance have been working with our district superintendent and with committees in our Methodist structure to help us think about how could we redeem that house so that this place right here could more fully express God's hope and God's love. And we think that that house can move us about a third, maybe half the way toward all of the deferred things that need to happen so that this campus can be a place of redemption with it fewer and fewer obstacles for folks that have been hurt by the church to keep encountering God's love and God's grace. It's a huge step, but our finance and trustees teams are starting to lean in to God's love and grace in ways that are saying, let's imagine this together. Let's work out some of the details and see how this property down there might help this place become a place of redemption, not just for a couple hours at this moment, not just for a couple of months because the weather is so hard, but all the time. It's going to take deep trust and love as we live into that together. It's a huge step that we'll take as a community over these next few months together into the next year. The reality is that kind of redemption of this space, it's going to unfold over 10 or 15 or 20 years. But how many of us imagined 3.5 years ago that this would happen on a Sunday morning? That we'd be graced with music and with all of these folks who long to find ways to follow Jesus. The Latin phrase is Missio Dei, the mission of God. The church, by rooting our lives in grace and growing in faith and reaching in love, this is what we do. We get caught up, redeemed by God, and we move in with and through God's mission. God's mission to redeem the whole world. We can't be certain where God's mission is taking us as a people, but we can trust one another and God, as best we can, knowing that we, like those people in Isaiah, many of us have been exiled, and that trust is tough. It's trust to hope after you've been hurt by an expression of the church. So it's not going to be easy. But step by step, we will see that we are in this together and that God's redeeming love is making us new in this place and in this time. So we're going to set goals. Many of us have already done that on these deep commitment cards, but not all of us in this room have. And so if you haven't already, or if you have, we'd invite you to revisit them. Like, how are you doing with some of the hopes that you had for your story of living this out? How is God's mission, the mission of God, calling you into the world differently? If you haven't been in Blueprint, maybe next Sunday is the time for you to show up. You can sign up on our new website. If you're wondering about reaching in love, maybe you need to be here at the end of this month to help welcome 120 unhoused folks who need a place of grace in their lives. I don't know how God is calling you, but I am certain that the mission of God is on the move in the world. And it's calling us, just like those broken down Israelites who were in exile generations and generations ago, it's calling us to be God's people, to look to the past, and to open up to what God's future holds. And if you think God is not listening, if you've given up your dreams of finding a home, if you need shelter in the wilderness, may we all together come to trust that rock that redeemed those folks in exile. And may that redemption live among us as we become God's witnesses. Amen. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.